You are. From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The next terrorist attack on U.S. soil, if and when it comes, may well unleash a deadly virus, not a bomb. Smallpox could quickly decimate entire communities, entire cities of unimmunized Americans. Yesterday, federal health officials took the bold step of unveiling a mass immunization program that would go into effect after a smallpox attack. But is that too late? In this hour, smallpox and the vaccination challenge. Earlier today, I spoke with Jonathan Tucker, a germ weapons expert with the Monterey Institute of International Studies and author of Scourge, The Once and Future Threat of Smallpox. I asked him for his assessment of the risk that a war with Iraq could come to the United States.
I think if Saddam Hussein knows that his days are numbered, he might consider striking back at the United States, either by sponsoring terrorist operations in the United States or by providing materials and encouragement to other groups. I think he would only do so in extremis, however, that he is probably deterred from doing so absent a direct threat to his personal survival.
So if a threat should then be there from Iraq or from the continuing threat from Al-Qaeda, how likely do you see a biological weapon as being the weapon of choice?
Well, an advantage of a biological weapon from the standpoint of a terrorist is its potential deniability. With a chemical weapon, the effects are immediate, making it easier to trace the perpetrator. With a biological weapon, there is a delay called an incubation period between the time when people are infected and when they actually develop symptoms. And that delay, in the case of smallpox, can be as long as 2 weeks. So by that time, the individuals who release the agent into the air or perhaps into the food supply could have been long gone, making it easier for either the terrorist organization or a state sponsor to deny responsibility.
So I guess the question is why, either in a war situation or in a terrorist attack, why is smallpox of such particular concern? Is it simply because of this two-week lag time between its introduction and the time it would start to take effect?
There are many reasons why smallpox is considered the worst-case biological agent. Unlike anthrax, there is no treatment for smallpox. One can only protect individuals from being infected, or if they are vaccinated within 4 days of exposure, prevent them from developing the illness. But once someone has developed smallpox, there is no effective treatment. It is also, unlike anthrax, a contagious disease from person to person. It will spread through the air as an infected individual speaks or coughs and can expose those in fairly close proximity. It is a fairly lethal disease. About a third of its victims will die. And it is also a hideous and disfiguring illness that has a high capacity to terrorize. So for all of those reasons, smallpox is a very formidable threat.
The Centers for Disease Control have just come out with a new plan for responding to a terrorist introduction of smallpox with mass vaccinations. What do you make of the effectiveness of this plan? If the United States should face such an eventuality, would this plan save us?
Well, the plan is merely a blueprint, and the real challenge will be the way it is implemented by states and localities. It's also unclear when the strategy of mass vaccination would actually be invoked. The initial strategy would be, if there were just a few cases, to isolate them and to use what is known as ring vaccination to vaccinate people who have come into immediate contact with infected individuals in an effort to build a firebreak of immune individuals and prevent spread. But if there is extensive dissemination of smallpox, for example, in the form of an aerosol, it would probably be necessary to vaccinate thousands, if not tens of thousands of people.
Just so that we understand, if smallpox were introduced and were left and there was no response of vaccination, how quickly could it become a national epidemic, and what portion of the American population would be vulnerable to it?
Well, the rate at which an epidemic would spread would depend on the number of people who were infected initially. So let's say if there were a cloud of the disease that was spread as an aerosol over a populated area, there could be potentially thousands of people in the initial wave of infection. They, after a two-week incubation period, they would become contagious themselves and could spread the disease further. The worst-case scenario would involve, for example, terrorists spreading smallpox in an airport, in which, of course, people disperse to multiple cities around the country, creating multiple foci of infection, which then spread further. You know, one shouldn't exaggerate the threat, but the potentiality is of spread is very frightening.
What weak spots in the CDC plan most concern you if the country should face this kind of smallpox outbreak?
Well, it just remains to be seen if the resources are in place consistently around the country to administer the vaccine in a timely manner. It has to be administered to people who have been potentially exposed within 3 or 4 days to prevent them from developing the full-blown illness. That's quite a challenging task. So the systems have to be in place and have to be exercised in a realistic manner to make sure that they would actually work in a crisis. Also, people have to be educated. The public has to be educated so that they don't respond in a panicky way, as we saw last fall with the rather small anthrax attack, which caused many people to run to the pharmacy and stockpile Cipro, even if they were not in direct danger themselves. I think a smallpox attack would be much more frightening. So if we are to administer the vaccine in an orderly manner, people need to remain calm and not all converge all at once on a vaccination center, but realize the characteristics of the illness so that they can respond in a calm and sober manner and know how to protect themselves.
Bottom line, are we close to an effective national response in readiness for the introduction of smallpox if and when it should ever happen?
We are not close today, though we have made very substantial strides. I think since September 11th, the government has moved very aggressively to acquire a large stockpile of smallpox vaccines so that mass vaccination has now become a possibility. So we have made significant strides in acquiring vaccine. By the end of this year, we should have roughly 200 million doses, nearly enough for the entire population. By early next year, we should have enough for every man, woman, and child. But the challenging part now is to develop systems to administer the vaccine, if needed, to very large numbers of people in a short amount of time in an orderly manner, and that is a tall order.
Jonathan Tucker, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be with you.
Jonathan Tucker is a germ weapons expert with the Monterey Institute of International Studies. He joined me from Washington. If there is a smallpox outbreak in the United States on American soil, are we ready? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that each state should be able to vaccinate 1 million people within 10 days after an attack. In a nation of 280 million people, is that enough? Are the state health agencies ready? And for the panicked crowds, for the chaos that some say would ensue, should we be vaccinating against smallpox now? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight in the studio is William Bicknell, Professor of International Health at Boston University and former Massachusetts Health Commissioner. Good evening and welcome, William Bicknell.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
Thank you so much for being with us. There's a lot to talk about here with the CDC proposal, with what the threat would be, with what the time frame, the window for addressing it would be. But I want to go all the way back to some very simple things first, if we could, in part because I may have had it a bit wrong in the introduction here tonight. Who has been immunized in the United States already, and what is the effectiveness of those immunizations today for people who have that little nickel or quarter-sized scar on their shoulder?
Right. Well, let me just go over that. First of all, not everybody who's immunized will have the little nickel or quarter-sized scar. I've been vaccinated twice, and I don't know where the scar is.
Okay, so that means it disappears, or some styles of doing it don't even produce it.
Yeah, or it just kind of goes away with time. So you can't 100% count on that.
You can't look at your shoulder and know what you had or didn't have.
Absolutely. immunization stopped, except for international travelers and then later laboratory workers, in this country in 1972. And most people think it kind of petered out starting around 1970. So that means if you're 30 to 32, you're kind of on the cusp.
So that's the borderline, not 45, as I said in the intro, but around 30, 32 years old.
So that means, if you look at the population of the U.S., that means about half the country has had smallpox vaccination, half hasn't.
Does it matter for those who have had the vaccination years ago, whether it's 30 years ago or 50 years ago, is that vaccination still protecting them or not?
Well, there are two parts to think of when you think about that. One is, if you get revaccinated, the chance of having a adverse reaction, a bad effect from the vaccination, is much, much, much less in people who have had a vaccination before.
So 30, 32 plus, getting vaccinated again,
it's
minimal
much
danger.
Safer, minimal danger. Second, you do want to screen for all the kinds of things I'm sure we'll talk about, eczema, HIV,
AIDS.
We
will indeed.
Two, we really don't know how much protection remains.
From these old vaccinations, childhood vaccinations.
Exactly. Now, and it's probably some, but not very much. 30 years out, you really can't count on it. So you might have a less chance of dying. You may have a less severe illness, but you can't count on much protection, and we don't honestly know. But we do know it's less.
All right. So you cannot count on much of anything necessarily from that earlier vaccination. What about the millions of Americans who have never been vaccinated against smallpox? Presumably they are fully vulnerable.
Absolutely. And it's a bad disease. Exactly as Dr. Tucker said, 25, 30% mortality overall in some age groups, the infants and young kids, it can approach 50%. Hospital workers in Europe in the 50s, 60s, and 70s who are unimmunized young adults, a small number of cases, but it went to 70% mortality. So it's a bad disease.
Just give us the short course on smallpox. When you get it, what are the symptoms? And if you're in the unlucky portion that goes to mortality, to fatality, what's the arc of the disease? How does it play out?
Well, what happens is I cough on you. I'm a walking terrorist. And
An innocent carrier.
Yeah, whatever, right? And 6 or 7 days later, you get kind of flu-like. You feel like you're really lousy and feverish and miserable, and you probably go to bed. And then you start to feel better, day 11 or 12, and your temperature drops. At that time, you're getting a rash appears in your mouth and throat. You don't see it.
Okay.
And you're very infectious.
Can you feel it? Is it a sore throat?
No, you don't necessarily feel that. And people would not pick it up. And then...
But you're contagious.
You're very contagious starting at that point. And then it's another 2 or 3 days before the real visible classic rash appears. So there's a period of 2.5 to 5 days when you're very contagious.
But feeling decent.
Feeling a bit better. You're sick, but you're feeling much better than you were in the program. But you're very contagious. So you might go to the hospital and say, geez, I wonder what that is. And you've infected people. You could come back in 24 hours and see. The second visit, say, oh, my God.
And from that point to death?
Oh, depending on death could be in, 3 or 4 or 5 days, 10 days, or you're better in you start getting better in several weeks.
There's so much to talk about tonight, but bottom line, do you feel better given what the CDC has done this week? Are we on the road to preventing an outbreak or not?
I think we are definitely on the road. I am extremely pleased with the step taken. There's more to be done pre-exposure, and there's a lot of refinement post-exposure, but this is a great step in the right direction.
We're talking tonight about the smallpox threat, about a war and terrorism and vaccination. Are you ready for a smallpox vaccination right now, tonight? If you're 30-something plus, do you have the little vaccination scar on your shoulder? And has it felt like a shield? Do you understand that it may not be? And should we be vaccinating the entire U.S. population now, right now? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Dr. William Bicknell. He's professor of international health at Boston University and former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the smallpox threat, about war and terrorism and vaccination. My guest tonight is Dr. William Bicknell. He's professor of international health at Boston University and former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. You're invited to join the conversation as well. Should we be vaccinating the entire U.S. population now? And does the smallpox threat feel like hype to you or all too real? Do you think Iraq will bring a war to the United States? Do you think terrorists won't? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Bill Bicknell, I want to talk about the CDC's program for vaccinating many Americans in a short period of time, if that becomes necessary. But I want to touch once more on what we touched on with Jonathan Tucker at the top of the hour and get your view. How real is this threat? Is this just kind of overwrought, or in an age of terrorism and the threat of mass terrorism, is this something we have to take seriously?
I have no special or private knowledge of that, but I do think that it's a realistic threat based on the head of the Russian kind of equivalent to the CDC, the Vector Institute, said, I think this could have escaped our control. Ken Allebeck.
Let's just confirm that smallpox was officially eradicated, but small stocks were kept in Russia, in the United States, and maybe elsewhere.
Well, people reported it was destroyed, but whether it was destroyed, do we know? So, and Russia definitely weaponized it.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that weaponized or unweaponized smallpox could well have leaked. Several very highly placed Russians have said they believe it's credible, if not certain. But we do not know it has. And, Dr. Tucker has told me that there's evidence that he has seen from declassified defense intelligence agency reports that North Korea has recently vaccinated its troops and Iraq has vaccinated troops at some time in the past. That maybe they are concerned about us, maybe
they're
not
concerned about themselves, perhaps.
Who knows?
So if it should come to the United States, presumably that is not known until somebody comes down
with
it. And some medical professional somewhere diagnoses it. From that point at which it's diagnosed somewhere in this country, walk us through what the CDC's new plan would look like.
Well, what I think would happen is the following. The first case or two will be diagnosed slowly. Nobody's seen this.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be diagnosed instantly.
Because doctors aren't looking for it. It's not part of their practice.
I mean, nobody has seen it, no matter how much you don't think Zebra.
No doctor alive in America today has ever treated it.
No, that's not correct. People have. There are people.
Me. I mean, okay.
But nobody's seen a case since 1977.
Okay.
And in this country, they haven't seen it since, God, way before that, 20 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't, even if you're primed for it, people come in with a rash. You don't first think smallpox. You think poison ivy or chickenpox or whatever. So the first couple of cases will be diagnosed late. The next cases, once the alarm goes out, everybody with a rash will be overdiagnosed early.
Right.
Probably.
But the alarm goes up with the first case. Then what happens?
The first case will go up and somebody will suspect it. Then it will have to be confirmed. And it can be confirmed relatively rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
As it's confirmed, depending on how certain it is, they'll start to distribute the smallpox vaccine from central stores scattered around the country to the locale where the reported case is.
So two things there. One, today, all smallpox vaccine in the United States is held by whom?
By CDC.
In how many locations?
I don't know that. I've heard multiple locations that are very secure.
But it's a restricted location, so it would then have to be sent out to what? Hospitals, clinics?
Well, to state and local authorities to be determined exactly who and where. And they can distribute it, and I think this is correct, in 12 hours they can get large amounts of vaccine anywhere in the country.
And do they start vaccinizing everybody or some select few? How's it chosen?
Well, I think those are some of the details that need to be worked out.
That's more than a detail.
Exactly. The logistics, as Dr. Tucker referred to, are really important.
But wait, are you saying that they haven't defined in any way who would be vaccinated in the case of an outbreak?
Well, what you would do is you would say, here's a case, and you'd put a little pin in a map.
Right.
and you would immediately identify the people close to that case, friends, family members, coworkers, neighbors, and you would vaccinate them.
This is the ring vaccination. Everyone they've come in contact with.
And as you did that, and there's some differences of opinion, you would be gearing up for local mass vaccination, which, in fact, is what was done, I understand, from talking to people who did smallpox eradication. They didn't do the contact trace. They said, gee, there's a case in the village, vaccinate the village.
Let's look at a very modern scenario, though. Jonathan Tucker raised this. What if smallpox virus is distributed through an aerosol means or some other ways? Let's say in a very busy airport, O'Hare International in Chicago, people flying all over the country. By the time you learn about it, there's no town in America that you can confidently say might not have been infected.
That's correct.
What happens then?
That's correct. Well, I believe one of the things that has to happen, which we have not discussed yet on the show, and the guidelines have not yet been released by the White House and Health and Human Services, is there needs to be substantial pre-exposure immunization of health workers, emergency workers, and others, in my opinion, necessary to preserve the function of civil society.
So you're saying even before an attack, we should be immunizing, vaccinating health workers now so that they can go out and not fear death themselves on the job.
Also, truckers, because cities have a limited supply of food, so that the trucks will bring in food, will bring in supplies.
Is this being done?
As yet, there has not been a decision taken on that. That is the papers say that's due in several weeks or soon.
So that's not being done yet. But let's get to this point. Let's say it's in O'Hare. It's all over the country. Mm-hmm. What's the plan?
Well, the plan now would be, and I don't think the plan is currently adequate until we've done substantial pre-exposure. The plan would have to then immediately move to nationwide mass vaccination.
How would that be accomplished?
Well, you'd have to have large numbers of vaccination points set up all over the country very, very rapidly. And I think you would have to have find ways to do it far more rapidly than using the little bifurcated needle that has been used.
Kind of power gun.
Serious consideration has to be given to using the jet injector that the military have used in immunizing GIs that has been used in smallpox eradication years ago.
But take us back, because this, I think listeners will be keenly interested in the details. All right, news comes out, we've got smallpox, it may be national. What next? I go to my doctor? I go to a hospital? I line up in a stadium?
Hopefully, the states, and I'm sure it will differ state by state because this is going to be a state by state thing. Massachusetts will have said, here's where you get vaccinated. You go in Newton, you go here. In Wellesley, you go there. In Dorchester, you go somewhere else. In Chelsea, and here's how you do it and when you do it. So
here's the all important question then. Is there a vaccine for everybody, or am I clawing my way to the front of the line?
Well, no. Right now, actually, if we had to today, with the stocks on hand, with dilution, I believe there's enough vaccine today for everybody in the country. So vaccine supply is not the issue. Getting it quickly dispensed and into your arm is yet to be worked out. And I think the plan that CDC put out is a wonderful beginning. There needs to be a lot of refinement to make it operationally effective.
Bill Bicknell, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Dr. Mohammed Akhtar. He's executive director of the American Public Health Association. He's former director of the Missouri State Department of Health and served as health commissioner in Washington, D.C. Good evening and welcome, Dr. Mohammed Akhtar.
Glad to be here.
Thank you so much for being with us. You have no doubt read with great interest the CDC plan for dealing with a smallpox outbreak if and when one should occur. What do you think of it? Is it up to snuff? Are we on the right track here? Are we on our way to making Americans safe from smallpox?
I think I agree with Dr. Becknell. What he said earlier, I think this plan is a little bit backward. What we needed was the plan that we could put in place now. Pre-exposure, plan. This is the plan that we need to put in place today. Before we should have released this part of the plan.
Are you saying to vaccinate all Americans or something else?
No. To vaccinate the first responders, the policemen, the firemen, the EMTs, the paramedics, the necessary personnel who will be necessary to carry out the work. Those people need to be vaccinated now. They need to be protected.
Mm.
And that will help us in two ways. One, that we will have these people who are going to be taking care of us protected now, rather than they stand in the line with us waiting to get their vaccination, as well as their families. Second, that we will learn a very valuable lesson by doing these immunizations. We haven't done these things in a long time to see what kind of assistance, what kind of stations we need when we go on to do the mass vaccination for the public. So that first step should have taken place by now.
But that's not part of even the CDC plan that was released yesterday.
I think this is why I say this plan is premature. This should have been released of a plan that's waiting at the White House. We should have said, let's go ahead and immunize our necessary personnel.
Okay, point one.
We should go to this.
Now, point one, we've got it. You'd like to see the first responders immunized right now, even truckers who will bring food around to American cities.
Oh, absolutely.
But let me ask about the other thing, because here's where ordinary citizens come in. What about the plan that's supposed to take care of the rest of the United States? Let's say there is a widespread smallpox infection. What do you think of the CDC's plan for addressing that problem, for getting millions of Americans vaccinated?
I think it's a very good start. It's a very good comprehensive plan, but states and the local jurisdictions do not have the capability today. As we speak today, I have spoken with earlier with the state and territorial health officials, and we believe that we do not have the capacity in trained manpower and logistic supplies to be able to immunize every man, woman, and child within 10 days.
How much time would we have? Is 10 days the window in which it would need to be done to protect against further death?
I think generally it's somewhere 3 to 5 days. After exposure, if you give vaccine, you could still be effective. But it'll depend upon where the case has taken place and how long the window is. If the case has taken place on the East Coast, we have a little longer window as we go towards the West.
If the first outbreak is there, Bill Bucknell, let me put this one question to you. How long do we have?
I think we should briefly discuss, and it'd be interesting what Dr. Fauci says when he comes on, about the 3 to 4 day window of opportunity where many people feel if you immunize, you may prevent the disease and will decrease the severity of it.
This is saying I've been infected,
and
now I have 3 to 4 days, and if I get the vaccine within that time, it still saves me or not?
Well, I believe that is not the case. The evidence for that is as follows that I've been able to find. 21 cases from an epidemic of several hundred in Tripoli in 1946, 21 people not vaccinated ever before, all of whom were vaccinated within 5 days, 100% got smallpox, none died. That is the only evidence that I've seen. So and there's a lot of anecdotal evidence from the smallpox eradication years that if you vaccinate in the first few days after infection, it's less severe.
But you're saying you'll still get it, you're less likely to die, but you still get it.
My reading of the evidence, and so that window is a bit imaginary.
But, Mohammed Akhtar, isn't this window built into the CDC presumptions?
I think it's built in the CDC presumption, but if you go after 4 or 5 days, then there's no chance. Then you are going to – the disease is going to spread as it would naturally.
Absolutely.
And
right.
people will die.
So whether or not it's perfect, you still want it. Mohammed Akhtar, Bill Bucknell, please stand by. We have a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. Let's try to bring some in. Vikas is on the line. Welcome, Vikas. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Let me just make it a little clearer.
Thank you.
I'm a physician, but I'm a cardiologist, so I don't claim to know very much about this.
All right.
But I have a question. You know, in the era of nuclear weapons, there was a lot of deterrence value in the sense of mutually assured destruction.
Yes.
And in this issue, it strikes me that the smallpox virus doesn't really respect borders. And even though we're talking about the United States, as well we should, you know, the example of O'Hare Airport raises the question that the density of travel as it is today, how long before it gets to Heathrow? How long before it gets to Berlin?
And or Baghdad, for that matter.
Or Baghdad. And that's the point. I mean, is there a rationality, or are we assuming irrational actors who would commit suicide globally?
That's a very keen point, because once smallpox is loose again in the world, I guess presumably no one is exempt. Mohammed Akhtar, how about it? Maybe this is much ado about nothing because anyone would be crazy to use it.
I can certainly understand that part. I think the more damage will be done in our friends and allies in Europe and in the Middle East and Far East than it will be in the United States, because we at least have a plan, we have the vaccine, they have none.
And yet, Bill Bicknell, the United States is taking this very seriously. So someone is thinking that the fact that it may boomerang is not necessarily enough to keep it from being used.
I think there are two things. One, I think it's a mistake to assume that terrorists share our rationale. They may have a very different view of the costs and benefits. And so I don't think we can – I would hope that would be a deterrent to use, but I would not count on it. And it seems to me the U.K., Israel, Germany, and the U.S. are all acquiring varying amounts of smallpox vaccination.
Because thank you for your call. Mohammed Akhtar, what about the dangers in the vaccine itself? I understand that some people die from this vaccine. Is that correct? And what's the ratio?
Yes, there is a danger in the vaccine, and that's why we are not recommending that everybody take it now. You know, it's estimated there'll be approximately 300 deaths, and then there'll be several hundred other people who will have serious complications if the
300
vaccine
deaths
is given
out
to
of 300 deaths out of what number?
300 million people. If all Americans were vaccinated, there'd be approximately 300 deaths.
But when I was a child, everybody got vaccinated. We took the risk. Doesn't it make sense to take an equal risk today?
Well, that's why it's so important to really do the risk benefit analysis, and that's why we all say that if there is a case that takes place. If when smallpox is out, there's an outbreak, we know that it's not naturally occurring. It has to be released by a terrorist. So at that point, the risk-benefit ratio changes. Then it's a lot easier to really go ahead and take the vaccine and take the risk than to face certainly 30% death rate if our population is infected.
Why not just do it now? I mean, that sounds callous, because you're saying 300 people would be condemned to die. On the other hand, we're talking about almost 300 million people here. Mohammed Akhtar.
I think we are sort of wanted to see that thing. What I want to see personally as a physician are two, one or the other thing. One, a very credible report by our central, by intelligence agencies that say that the threat is real and it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They have credible report. Or second, a case of smallpox taking place someplace, so that we could then, at that point, the balance of risk and benefit shifts. At that point, it becomes perfectly logical for us to protect our people against the threat of smallpox and withstand as a nation the complications and deaths that will take place because of smallpox.
Mohammed Akhtar, I know we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Sure, my pleasure.
Mohammed Akhtar is Executive Director of the American Public Health Association. We're talking tonight about the smallpox threat, about war and terrorism and vaccination. Can you imagine Americans calmly lining up for vaccinations after a smallpox outbreak? And are you confident that your local health clinic will get the job done on deadline? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
From Boston.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the smallpox threat, about war and terrorism and vaccination. My guest in studio tonight is Dr. William Bicknell. He's former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health and a professor of international health at Boston University. You are invited to join the conversation as well. Does the threat of smallpox feel real to you, or like something out of science fiction, out of history? And if you could get the vaccination now, would you take the risk and do it? Would you have your children take the risk? We are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Mark's calling from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This whole situation seems utterly foolish to me. The administration seems to be willing to spend hundreds of billions of dollars and risk life and limb of our own troops and kill who knows how many tens or hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis, when by simply spending what little it would take to immunize the entire United States against whatever biological weapons Saddam has, he disarms Saddam and eliminates the threat and
Well, of one weapon anyway. But Mark,
there's no need to go to war.
Are you saying, Mark, you'd like to see the entire U.S. population vaccinated
Absolutely.
Now?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if we're immunized, there's no threat. If there's no threat, Saddam is disarmed.
Well,
it's as simple as that.
He's disarmed of one weapon. But let's take up that point. Mark, thank you for your call. Bill Bicknell, what about it? We talked just a little with Mohammed Akhtar, but what about the idea of vaccinating now? What's the pro and con?
Okay. Here's how I see it. I think we should start because we do not have a big experience with vaccinating young adults who've never been vaccinated before. So we want to learn about that.
Why don't we have that? I still don't understand
because
that. Didn't we do? Oh, we did it in childhood.
We did it in childhood.
I see. So
and adults. Then they were revaccinated as adults.
Got it.
So.
Got it.
So we don't have that experience, only a few hundred thousand. Mm-hmm. So start with first responders mm-hmm. who need it and develop that experience, see what the side effects are. My own belief is with careful screening, with the use of a proper protective dressing that prevents you mm-hmm. from infecting others, mm-hmm. we will find the side effects will be very low.
Dr. Akhtar said 300 out of 3 million. We might have 300 deaths out of 300 million vaccinations in the United
States.
Well,
I think you have
agree?
To... No, I don't. I think that's too high. If it's done correctly. 180 million, we've got 280 million people, say
okay.
300.
Yeah.
150 million have been immunized, 150 million haven't. The deaths in those who've already been vaccinated mm-hmm. are going to be 1 per 5 million, not 1 or 2 per million. It's going to be
much,
less.
Much, much less.
Much, much less. Children before exposure, before an attack, mm-hmm. you would not do because the side effects of vaccine are very high in children. 80% of the deaths and severe complications are in children under 10. Don't do those unless there's an attack when then the equation changes.
And but children are nicely grouped in schools. So
and you
can
isolate
quickly.
Them and get mm-hmm. them. Precisely the mm-hmm. point. So then you just have the population of 10 and above to age 30, and you screen them carefully for eczema, for HIV, for any other contraindications, and you screen the people who've already been vaccinated before for those same things. And I
eczema makes people more susceptible to
yes,
the downside
if you have
of the
a
vaccine.
Rash, the rash, the vaccination can essentially spread elsewhere in your body and give you a body-wide rash.
So in other words, don't necessarily vaccinate them either because unless and until there's an attack, they needn't take the risk.
And you can make a very good argument that if you've got a kid at home with eczema or a history of eczema, you wouldn't want to vaccinate mom and dad.
So why isn't the CDC recommending exactly what you're suggesting?
Well, I believe they should. They are concerned about the number. They are concerned about a death or a bad accident outcome that would occur before we had a smallpox attack. I think the public is ready to pay that small price to essentially take one weapon off the table. The more we do beforehand, mm-hmm. the easier any control is afterwards. There'll be less panic. The people who are at most mm-hmm. risk will be at less risk because there will be more control. The people at most risk with a smallpox attack are the immunocompromised, are the people with AIDS, mm-hmm. are the people with kidney transplants.
But if everybody else has been vaccinated, those people don't have to fear infecting their children, affecting
exactly.
the vulnerable.
Exactly.
I want to bring into our conversation Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Disease, joining us this evening from Washington, D.C. Good evening and welcome, Anthony Fauci.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. What's your sense of the workability of the CDC plan that's been outlined yesterday? Bill Bicknell is saying, why not go ahead and get started on a wide-scale vaccination now?
Right.
Should we? Shouldn't we?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people get confused about what plan was announced the other day. The CDC brought out an implementation plan, a manual for the ABCs of how to perform the vaccinations were we to get attacked and have to respond to an attack. That's what that plan is.
But is there
what
any
you,
other
plan? Let me finish.
But
what you were saying and what you were discussing mm-hmm. with Dr. Bicknell is the decision, the policy, which Dr. Bicknell articulated very well and made mm-hmm. some very good points, mm-hmm. what the policy should be about anticipating an attack and preemptively vaccinating first responders and the extended group of first responders, and then ultimately let the vaccine be available for individuals on a voluntary basis. Those are two different things.
Agreed, but to a citizen it may look like a distinction without a difference. Is there a policy to vaccinate first responders and others now?
Right now, sent to the president by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tommy Thompson, are options that include just what Bill Bicknell was talking about. Within a very reasonable period of time, I imagine it's going to be no more than weeks, the president and the secretary will make a decision and make the announcement. This is something that we know is being carefully considered by the president, is looking over all of the options, and is very well aware that if a decision is made to go forth and do a wider spread type of voluntary vaccination, one of the critical issues is to make sure that the people understand the real and potential toxicities. And I think once they do, then everything that Dr. Bicknell was just saying makes sense. That is certainly one of the options that is being seriously considered by the president.
Can you tell from the body language of this administration whether they are seriously looking at doing exactly this, that we may see a wide-scale vaccination announced within a few weeks and proceeding how soon?
Well, I can, but I'm not going to tell you because I don't want to get up in front of the president, and we'll leave that for him to make the decision and the announcement.
How soon would we be ready to do it, just in logistical terms?
Well, in logistical terms, right now, one of the big problems that we were discussing months ago, Bill and I, about some of the impediments to this was the lack of availability of vaccine. But now we have enough vaccine to do exactly what Bill has been talking about on the show. So the critical issue is the implementation at the state and local health level. So even with the vaccine, you got to get into the practice that Dr. Bicknell was talking about of being able to implement, namely how are you going to do it, out of what clinics are you going to do it, how are you going to supply it, what about the personnel that would be needed. So you could start tomorrow if you needed to, but getting ramped up to be done in a measured way without any panic is something that'll take time. And the more you do, the better and better you get at it.
When can you imagine this beginning? If it gets a green light from the White House, if within the next some weeks, when might we see smallpox vaccines beginning to roll out?
You know, if the decision, and this is an if that decision is made, it likely would be in a few months for the simple reason that it is preferable to use a vaccine that is licensed purely for logistic standpoint, because if you're going to use a vaccine for which you have to get an individual permission from everyone, logistically it would take much longer and be much more complicated. The vaccines that will be the first line ones that will be used right now are in the process of going through the approval protocols of getting licensure. Once that happens, then it would be much more easy to do what we're talking about tonight. So I would project that if a decision is made, it likely would occur in a few months, let's say by the end of this calendar year.
Anthony Fauci, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Much
appreciated. Anthony Fauci is director of the National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Diseases. You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. John is on the line. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
The reason I'm calling is, let's say, for example, if there's a decision to make widespread vaccinations. My wife, who's 30 years old, did receive the vaccination as a child.
Okay.
And she had suffered a very severe local inflammatory response, a very severe reaction that apparently took years before it resolved fully. So the question would be, here someone has a history of having a very severe reaction to the vaccine. Should she or people like her be ones that would get this vaccine if it's intended for everyone to get?
Bill Bicknell.
Yeah, I think... I'm picking up on what Dr. Fauci said. You know, when you do it in a measured way, in a non-crisis situation, before there's a smallpox exposure, one would, you know, look at your wife as a clinician and say, well, you know, perhaps in your case, we really shouldn't do that unless there is an actual attack. If there was an attack and your wife lives wherever she lives, somewhere, wherever you may be, then you would absolutely re-immunize her. But because she did have that complication, you probably wouldn't do her on a pre-exposure basis just to bend over to be on the safe side.
John, thanks for your call. Jane's on the line. Hi, Jane. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to put in a word here, backing off a bit from the vaccine question.
All right.
About educating the public. There's a lot that can be done to educate the public about how to reduce contagion from smallpox, for example.
That, such as?
Well, wearing a mask, staying home, being protective of caregivers because they're most vulnerable, maybe staying away from a hospital because historically, hospitals are where people have spread smallpox.
So you're saying get some public health messages out there now.
Yeah, I think the public can be educated about this. And also the other group, of course, it's very simple, is physicians. There are lots of ways, and they're out there now, of distinguishing between smallpox and chickenpox, for example, or just getting your ordinary physician sort of alerted so that if something does happen, that they can connect those epidemiological dots.
Jane, thanks for your call. Let me put it to Bill Bicknell. What about it? How open is this to being minimized through public health education?
I think the benefit of public health education will be what is the reality of the disease, if there is an exposure, what to do and what not to do so that there won't be panic, so you won't have people who are unexposed running to places where there is the disease. Absolutely. But the real protection, if smallpox is released, is timely vaccination, because you don't know who's infected, you don't know how to prevent that, and the mask that really works is a very, very sophisticated mask. And
this isn't just a cotton mask you see in a Japanese
no,
subway.
No, I don't think so.
Bill Bicknell, our time is running down. I just want to go back to the basics in a sense here. If it should be decided that we need the smallpox vaccination nationally, I hear you saying most people don't need to worry about it. The odds are very small that they'll have a problem with this vaccination.
With proper screening, that is absolutely correct. We will have some side effects. We will have some severe illness. We will have some deaths. But my view is if it's done on a voluntary basis with careful screening, with good public education, this is a thoughtful, feasible, responsible thing to do, and it takes the teeth out of one bioterrorist weapon.
And very quickly, we heard in Massachusetts talk of people spending 3 weeks away from the office if they got the vaccination. Is that necessary?
Well, I think actually that that's going to be studied in Massachusetts, and I think it will turn out to be not necessary except in a very, very small special category of worker if you're working with the immunocompromised or something like that.
Bill Bicknell, it's been terrific having you tonight. Thanks for clearing up so many angles on the smallpox front. Thank you very much for coming in.
My pleasure.
Dr. William Bicknell is professor of international health at Boston University and former commissioner of the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. You can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Imada, Kelly Jones, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Aaron Lyman, Sabi Mir, and Oliver Reed. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. This is WB.